When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We are here, and it is now. I am Chris Olsen, coming to you with the RotoWire UFC 282 DFS and betting preview. If you think the people next to me don't look like Joe and Sean, well, that's because they aren't. We had a couple of late replacements this week. Joe had a birthday. Sean also had a birthday, but that is not why he's here. He is sick, so we wish him a speedy recovery. But gentlemen sitting next to me will fill in. They will fill in very well and then some. I have the MMA monk, who regular viewers of the show will recognize as someone who has been here before. And welcome Drake Brereton, who writes articles for RotoWire as Drake's Takes. Gentlemen, how are we doing tonight?
Doing great.
Yeah, doing fantastic. Glad to be back on for sure. I appreciate it.
All right. We have a decent card here, I would say. A lot of late replacement fights, which kind of makes things strange. Not exactly what you would consider the best quality UFC 280 pay-per-view card from a fan perspective. We only care about the bets, and there's a lot of that here. Main event, interesting, I would say. Certainly not the one we expected with Glover Teixeira not being a part of it, but What do you guys think of the main event in terms of watchability, first of all, and then bettability or DFS play? Monk, I think you're muted.
Oh, shit. Of course, I thought I hit my button. I don't think either one of these guys really expected to be here, per se, but this is the fight that we all love to see. Everybody loves Jan. I'm personally a fan of his opponent as well, Ankalaev. I got to lean on which way I think the fight's going to go, but I'm very excited for this light heavyweight title main event for sure.
I'm right there with him. I think, anytime you get Polish power in there, there's always that chance for that big one. Unfortunately, he's running into a bit of a buzzsaw who's just a phenomenal overall fighter. So it should be an exciting one. I don't think they're going to make it boring. I think it's going to be a good show.
All right. Well, we will get there. Of course, we start from the first fight on the prelims. Before we get there, last piece of business, I promise, I just want to tell everyone to go to rotowire.com/free for a 10-day free trial, no credit card required. Get everything that is behind a paywall for 10 days. Now, with all of that out of the way, let's get to the fights. The first fight on the docket is Cameron Sayman at 9,300, excuse me, taking on Steven Koslow, coming back at 6,900. Odds on this fight, Sayman could be had at minus 340, Koslow coming back at plus 280. And, I'll start this off before I kick it. I just don't understand a line this wide. Particularly, look, this is just maybe a bias of mine. I'm not a big fan of these guys coming over from the EFC, which is a South African promotion. We've had a couple of them in the UFC before. They haven't stuck around. And to be honest, I don't see anything really that special about Sayman. His bout on the Contender Series, the first round, he kind of just gave away just by waiting a little too much. The opponent got ahead. He came on stronger and actually started to pressure and took over the fight, but I don't know if I can trust it. I think maybe he's one of these guys who, he'll see the lights and he'll wither. And Steven Koslow, I mean, he's a brown belt submission grappler. That might be enough here. Just for, especially from a DraftKings perspective, when you're looking at 6,900 and the takedown threat and submission. I think all of Steven Koslow's six wins, both these gentlemen are 6-0, by the way, all of Steven Koslow's six wins have come by submission. Both these guys are dedicated finishers. Simon with four KO TKOs in his six wins. And yeah, you know, the more I think about this, I didn't actually write it up this way because, you know, tape is kind of scarce, and I don't have too much to offer in that way as a breakdown. But it's just, again, my justified or unjustified UFC bias, and also the fact that I didn't love what I saw from Saman in his contender series debut. So I think I'm gonna go for Coslo here in a big dog for the first pick of the night. I wonder how you guys feel about it, Monk. What do you think about this one? Am I crazy or am I in the ballpark here?
I don't think you're crazy. I mean, like you said, these guys are both 6-0. We don't hardly know much about them whatsoever. One of them's nickname is the airport code for Minneapolis, St. Paul. And the other one's nickname is Obi-Wan Shinobi the Pillow. So really, who knows what we're going to get out of either of these guys. The line to me, like you said, is incredibly wide. 9,300 for Simon this week, 6,900 for Coslo. That automatically puts me towards Coslo for the DraftKings side. Just, you know, because 9,300 is the second highest salary out of all salaries this week. And this is a guy with six professional fights. He does have technically the better experience, I guess, being on the Dana White Contender Series. But also right now, the projected ownership for Stephen Coslo might be in the single digits. So I'm definitely going to look to be over that for sure. I mean, these guys have finished almost every single one of their fights. I mean, Coslo 6-0, like you said, six submission finishes. If he gets this out of the first round, who knows what Simon's going to look like. We might be able to see, you know, lock up some kind of submission for Coslo in the second. From a betting perspective, I'd honestly look at fight doesn't start round three, sits at about minus 150. I do not expect this to go to decision. And there's got to be some sort of value on the Coslo side. Maybe he gets in there and Simon rolls, but we'll just have to see. I'll have to see it before I believe it.
All right, Drake, how you feeling about this one?
I'm going to be a little bit opposite of you guys. Now, Coslo, you're right, 6-0, and all six of those wins by submission, in the first round. His cardio is going to be questionable. Saman definitely has the better cardio of the two. I went and watched as many fights of his that I could. He was gun-shy in his contender series fight. That said, I don't know if we'll see the same one. I think he will in that first round kind of play a little hesitant to avoid getting his neck taken. But after that, I think he's going to come out and just light him up. At 9,300, do I think he hits his value? Probably not. But it's I think he's going to come out and show what he's got.
All right, moving on. Next fight is TJ Brown. Or I'm sorry, let's go with the favorite first. That's Eric Silva at 8,300 versus TJ Brown at 7,900. Odds on this fight is basically a pick'em, a minus 110 a pop in most places. And I think I'm going to go, to a certain extent, both of these gentlemen are wrestlers and grapplers, but I think I'm going to go with who I see as the more relentless wrestler and grappler, and that would be TJ Brown. I've seen a lot of love for Eric Silva this week. I think, he's kind of a showman, you know, marches his opponents down with his hands down, throws a lot of big power, can grapple in his own right. A lot of first round finishes, couple of third rounds early in his career, a lot of first round finishes after that. And TJ Brown, his game is to break you. Now, sometimes, not unlike a Derek Minner, sometimes, you know, that plan goes awry and he breaks himself. So we'll have to be wary of that. But I think that Eric Silva, you know, first time coming in, and again, a lot of first round finishes, is he going to be ready for a deep waters guy like TJ Brown? I think it's a real question. And I think, there's a lot of value on Silva, especially, you know, for that first round finish if he gets it. But I think he's going to be, and Monk might have a little bit more insight on this. I think he's going to be a little too heavily favored here. I think that TJ Brown is DraftKings favors the wrestling and takedowns anyway, if that's the way we're looking at this. And for a pick'em fight, I think this is maybe more of a DFS play than a bet in any case. And I think that if you're going to play it, play for the wrestling, play for the grappling, play for the – we know that Eric Silva is going to engage in the scrambles. I don't think he's going to shy away from them. And I think eventually TJ Brown breaks him there. So that's the way I'm looking at this. Let's start with Drake for this one. Drake, how are you seeing this?
I don't disagree with you entirely. I do think that Silva is going to come out really fast, and it's going to come down to whether or not Brown can weather it. My problem with Brown is he has not looked all that great in really any of his UFC fights, particularly his last one against Nurdembeek. He just looked almost lazy at times. He likes to sit back, and he tends to be a little too patient. And if he's going to do that against Eric Silva, he's going to get himself knocked out or submitted. So I mean, at their prices on DK, 79 and 83, I think one of them will smash value, just depending on which way you go with it, because I do think that there is going to be a finish in this one. I definitely lean the way of Silva. I get that I think he's 35 making his debut, but man, he's an animal when he gets into that octagon.
Monk, how about you? How are you going to play this one?
Yeah, I agree. I think you definitely have to kind of be on both sides. What we're going to see from TJ Brown is, like you said, a bunch of, you know, hopefully grappling, control time. My issue with him is, when is he going to make his TJ Brown type mistake? It's going to come. And can Eric Silva capitalize on that? That's the other half of the equation. If you put DraftKings scoring on Silva's DWCS fight, he would have scored almost 9 points a minute and ended up with 103 in that win. So he's got, you know, he's definitely capable. Can he capitalize on a possible TJ Brown mistake? That's kind of what we're waiting for. But a ton of takedown and control time points for these guys. If it finishes inside the distance, I expect to see some of that. Possibly a sloppy knockdown, even if one of these guys gets a bit too overzealous. Obviously, TJ Brown has the strength of schedule. And the last thing I'll point out is he is 2-3 in his UFC career. In his three losses, he is averaging 45 DraftKings points per loss. That is the third best number on the card, probably out of the most fights. He scored 22 against Chavez, 40 against Nurdembeek, and 73 against Jordan Griffin. He was pretty much winning that fight until he wasn't. Average of 45 points even in a loss. So I feel pretty comfortable rostering him at 7,900. I'll have a bit of Eric Silva as well for that implied early finish potential.
All right. And, you know, I like that addition. I mean, there is almost certainly going to be some kind of self-destruct mechanism, and it's imperative that Silva take advantage of it, or, you know, get swallowed up. Okay, as we move on, lagging a little bit. Sorry, one second. As we move on here, Billy Quarantillo at 8,600 taking on Alexander Hernandez at 7,600. The line on this fight. Quarantillo can be had at minus 170, Hernandez at plus 145. Now, I've written this, I've talked about this. I think that Quarantillo is the best favorite value on the card. Not a big fan of Alexander Hernandez. Think he's far too breakable, has been since that Cowboy Cerrone fight. If he can press a significant advantage of you, like he did with rookies like Mike Breeden or really hittable guys, then he's fine. He can just use his power and his athleticism and overwhelm you. But if you got a guy who's going to march him down and not break, well, then he's going to lose his confidence. We saw it against Cowboy, as I said. We saw it against Renato Moicano, as Alexander had a good first round in that fight. I just think he's something happened to him after that loss. And Quarantillo is the kind of guy who just won't stop. He's got over 100 DK points, I think, in, I want to say, four of his five DraftKings wins. He can grapple. He throws a ton of strikes. And unless Hernandez can get him out of there early, which only one person has gotten Quarantillo out of there. It was in 2016. So I'm going to bet on Quarantillo to be durable enough to withstand this. And, honestly, I think he just, this is another drowning. I think this one will happen much sooner. I think that, by the end of the first round, this is going to be Quarantillo's fight. And then from there, he's just going to do whatever he wants. So I'm big on Quarantillo here. I'll have a lot of them. If Hernandez surprises, it's probably going to be a bad night for me. I'll have a little bit of Hernandez just because of the power and the athleticism. But as I say, you know, I don't think there's as many paths for Hernandez here as you might think just by looking at his skill set. My pick is evidently Quarantillo. Monk, how you seeing this one?
Yeah, I agree. I'm going to pick Billy Q as well. At 8,600, he's fantastic value, like you said, for DraftKings. The second best player on the card, 5.16 points a minute is what this guy puts up. And this is over 77 minutes of UFC cage time. So this is not a fluke or a one-off. He's also averaging almost 117 per win. And much like who TJ Brown, who we just talked about, when he does lose, and he has lost twice, he's averaging over 60 points per loss. So some very good insurance there if you like him for cash as well. He's only $183 over his average salary, averaging the second best value on the entire card. I completely agree. Alexander Hernandez also dropping from lightweight to featherweight. Did not look sucked out, though. Looked decent on the scale. I mean, really looked like it was his natural weight class. And everybody was saying, you know, how there's no way he's going to have a really hard time making 145 because he always comes in so ripped up. But it's not really the case today. But that said, I'm still on the Quarantillo side. Like you said, he doesn't break no matter what. That Shane Burgos fight was an all-out war and fantastic to watch. And he was in there with Burgos the whole time. Obviously, he got beat. He also landed 164 significant strikes in that fight. So he's going to bring some action. Like you alluded to, three of his four wins over 100 points. Alexander Hernandez has given up, over 90 in three of his losses. So three of his four losses. I like Billy Q here, and I like him hopefully inside the – either whether it's inside the distance or decision, I think he scores really well for 8,600.
All right, Drake, how you seeing this fight?
I'm with you guys. This is my favorite on the card. Billy Q has been my boy since he got in. I absolutely love this guy. You brought up the Shane Burgos fight, and, man, he took 190 strikes in that fight. Still didn't go down. You can't tell me there's anything Hernandez can do to put Billy Q out. After the first couple minutes, this is going to be Billy Q's fight the entire time. He is going to ragdoll Hernandez until he finishes him. And I think he completely smashes value. I think he's mispriced. I think the minus 170 is wrong. He should be closer to about a minus 250. This is the best value for me on the whole card.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it makes me nervous when everybody's on the same guy, just as strong on a favorite. The public darlings sometimes burn you, but no choice. Have to go with it. Should say at this point, we did lose a fight, which would have been coming up next, which would have been Vinicius Salvador versus Daniel Da Silva, is now off the card. Which, just a note here for me personally, I don't mind this fight off the card because I don't like these fights where you have to have one guy or the other.
I'm so glad I don't have to roster this fight anymore. So glad.
I'm glad that Daniel Da Silva, we don't get to see out more terrible fight IQ. That's where I'm at. He has the worst fight IQ I've ever seen.
I did not want to put him in 20, 30% of my lineups. That's for freaking sure.
Yep. Absolutely. I mean, it would have just made me angry to just have to burn all those lineups when Da Silva just looked good for about 2 minutes and then gave the fight away. So, yep. So I'm glad we agree on that as well. Let's move on to our next fight, which is on the card, which is one of the better fights on the card, in my opinion, which is Joaquin Buckley at 8,500 versus Chris Curtis at 7,700. Line on this fight, Joaquin Buckley minus 170, Chris Curtis plus 145, and not as drastic as some of the other ones we've seen, but I again would say I think the favorite is a little too wide in this spot. I love Chris Curtis. I love his style. Love his body work, the way he saps the energy of his opponent. Buckley, we all know his game. He can be explosive. He can even wrestle a little bit when the situation calls for it. But he can also get wild when the fight isn't going his way. We saw that in his last fight against Nasruddin Imavev.
Nasruddin.
Yeah. Okay. Wonderful. I knew one of those was correct. But in any event, yeah, I think we've seen him get frustrated and sort of just go for the home run shot. And if he does that against Curtis, who was a really solid boxer, really good counter striker, I just don't think it's going to go well for him. I don't think he's going to be able to take Curtis down. Not only has Curtis had good takedown defense, as a matter of fact, 100% takedown defense during his time in the octagon, and against some better wrestlers, I would argue, than Joaquin Buckley. So, you know, this is not going to be the case where, you know, the Hermanson fight was a little bit of a surprise, but, you know, it's not that surprising. He would struggle fighting on the inside against a taller man. He's not going to have that problem here. Obviously, Buckley is live to change the course of the fight with one strike. If he does not do that, I expect Chris Curtis to have a Chris Curtis fight where he wears down the opponent, maybe gets a late finish. But all in all, totals really well. I think this is a good fight to bet as well, because I just think this line should, you know, maybe at a pick'em, maybe Curtis as a slight favorite. But I think this is a good spot wherever you want to play it. But yeah, my play is Curtis, and we'll start off with Drake. How you seeing this one?
Well, you know, so the one good thing about my article being out is you can see all my picks, so I can't really change them. I took Curtis as one of my picks because I do think he's the better fighter. You look at Buckley, he will have that one-shot power. That chance is always going to be there. Curtis has already shown how tough he is. And I think what's going to happen is Curtis is going to take whatever blows that Buckley tries to give him, but he's going to end up piling on volume. Buckley's going to get frustrated, and he's just going to end up falling apart. You look at Buckley's wins, the last three. I mean, he lost to Imavov, but then he had beaten Duraev, Al-Hassan, and Arroyo. None of those are huge names. I mean, that doesn't scare me. He's got the one-shot power, but to me, in this fight, that's all that he has. I think Curtis comes out, smashes value, and I'm going to have him I'll be heavy on him.
Yeah, no, I agree. A lot of agreement so far. Let's see if we can change that going forward. Monk, what do you think about this one?
I like this fight. I personally like Buckley. I just like the guy. I like him as a fighter. I'd like to see him get the win here. My take on this one is probably going to be fade. I'm just going to fade this one as a whole. I'm going to get completely off of this fight. Right now, their ownership is around 50% total between the two of them. I think I'm going to try to save some money there. I'll have more Curtis than I will Buckley, but I think I'm going to be pretty low. Neither guy scores 3 points a minute. They average about 95, 96 per win. And I think they're going to, you know, if what Drake said is correct, which I probably do agree with, Buckley could start to get worn down, possibly start to get a bit frustrated. He does handle that frustration pretty well, though. He did against Imavov. He did hang in there. He did have moments in the third round, but it just was not enough, unfortunately. I could see that happening again. I'm hoping it doesn't. I mean, I don't have anything against Chris Curtis. I'd like to see Buckley win here. But the salary is the only reason I'd have more Curtis than Buckley. I don't mind the dog pick at all, but I'm going to get a little contrarian, I think, maybe, and fade this one as a whole.
All right. Moving on to the next fight is Edmund Shahbazyan at 9,400 versus Dalcha Lugambula at 6,800. The line on the fight coming back is -200/-300 for Shahbazyan, let's call it, +240 for Dalcha. And this is where I think I will be the only man standing, but we'll see. I am on Dalcha here. I think that Edmund Shahbazyan, we've seen wrestlers and explosive fighters break him before. And Dalcha fits that category. Now, he's the worst of this brand that Edmund Shahbazyan has fought. But I do think he is in the style of a fighter as Derek Brunson, not nearly as accomplished, of course. But especially going forward, like there was a while in Dalcha's career where he wasn't aggressive enough. I think he's working on that. I like that he's mixing in light kicks. He's using the judo more. He's using the wrestling more. Very muscle bound, very, very prone to gassing, but so is Edmund. And not unlike Alexander Hernandez, a guy who can have the fight beaten out of him. I think that, if Dalcha gets an early takedown here, as we've seen him go to his wrestling earlier and earlier, it can sway the fight. And Edmund might just be one of these guys who came in like a bat out of hell, and he has a weakness, and I think Dalcha has the skills to exploit that weakness. He's a little too reckless for me to be comfortable saying it, to say take it to the bank. But at 6,800, I think there's a good shot, as long as he can make it past the first round, and Dalcha doesn't get finished by strikes all that often. So if he can make it past the first round, I think he's got a real shot here. I'm on the big dog once again. So that's two big dogs for me on DraftKings, two sub 7,000 plays. That's either the famous last words or maybe a big night if they both come in. So we'll see. But Monk, we'll start with you. Are you riding with the big dog here, or are we going on Edmund for a comeback?
I imagine if those two hit, I mean, you'll be sit. I'd be shocked if you weren't sitting real pretty. I don't like the line here, the difference in salary. You're right. If Dalcha can get out of the first round, I mean, that's a ton of value on his $6,800. My only pushback with what you said is, and I will be picking Edmund here in this spot, is he switched a much needed camp switch. Get out of Edmund. Edmund, I always want to call him Targaryen. I know that's not right. Taverdian. Yes, thank you. Get him out of that camp. And thank goodness he got out. Hopefully he's been taking the last year and week or two at, I believe, Extreme to build his skill set, to fix that cardio, and to really just become the fighter that he should be. He's still so young, 25 years old. I obviously guys can fizzle out at any age. I hope that's not the case, because this guy showed a lot of promise, did not look good in his last three fights, but he did lose to guys like, I don't know, Derek Brunson. And back in 2020, how old was Shahbazi? He just turned 25 like last month. So he was like 22, 23 years old, fighting Derek Brunson, fighting Jack Hermanson, and fighting Nasruddin Imavov. So I want to give this guy a second chance. Lungi Mbula has been finished in three of his four losses. I'm not the world's biggest narrative guy, but this seems like the UFC is like, okay, Edmund, let's see what you can do here. Let's give you an invitation to come back in, with a big finish, a big KO or sub finish. And I'm thinking that's probably how this is going to go. So I like Shahbazi, and I like him for cash. I'll find a way to put him in some GPPs, as he does score over 110 per win when he was winning. So I know it was a while ago. I'm relying on the camp switch, but at the same time, I'm not going to get overzealous. I want to see what he looks like here.
Drake, break the tie here.
All right. Monk, you said it. You took the words right from me. I think the UFC is giving him an extremely winnable fight. Like you said, he switched camps. I saw a few clips of him. He does look like he has been working back to, towards what he was doing. I was at the beginning of the week, or I was a little bit on Lungi Mbula just because of his power and his wrestling, but I am extremely worried about his gas tank. I don't think that he is going to last very long, especially when Shahbazian is going to be crushing his body. I really think he's going to kick and he's going to make him gas, and it's going to cause him to be finished. His price point, 9,400. I'm not the biggest fan of it, because if it gets outside the first round, he might have problems hitting value for it. But, with Lungi Mbula where he is, it's not a bad spot to play with, and a bunch of them, because he's got that chance. And if he does hit it, like you said, Chris, it's going to be good.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's move on to a heavyweight fight. We have Chris. I always want to go with the dog first. I don't know why. Maybe that's just my subconscious bias. Jair Rozenstruik at 8,700 taking on Chris Daukaus at 7,500. The line on this fight, we have Rozenstruik at minus 175. Daukaus coming back at plus 150. These are two boys who have had some quick finishes in the past. I'm always nervous about Jair fights because he fights so slow that there's always a chance that it's a washout heavyweight fight. Daukaus has been, it's strange. He's been a brawler in the past, but in fights with like Shamil Abdurakhimov, we've also seen him been more of a counter striker, waiting to walk Shamil into traps, and it did work. But I think there's a little bit of a worry of this being something of a staring match. If it's not, I think that I like Rozenstruik here. Dawkus, one of his main selling points, and I think the reason why he got so many early finishes when he was, you know, down the ranks, was he has very fast hands for a heavyweight. That takes him very far. He doesn't have faster hands than Rozenstruik, however, and I don't think he's a more accurate counter striker. I think when these two get in exchanges, I think Rozenstruik is going to find the chin more readily than Dawkus will. So I have to take Rozenstruik here. This might be one of those fights where, like, you know, nothing happens, and then we see a knockout. Wouldn't surprise me at all. But, you know, for a heavyweight bout, I might be a little under on this one just because, you know, I think these guys can stare in the mirror a little bit. And I think, you know, it might be a fight where, you know, they just sort of one waits for the other and they both look to counter and time bleeds off the clock. But my pick is going to be Rozenstruik. I think if anybody gets the knockout, it's going to be him. And Monk, we'll start with you first. How are you going to play this one?
Yeah, I actually agree, and I'll save part of my argument for the hot takes portion of the podcast, but I will be under on this fight. This one and the Chris Curtis Buckley fight are the two that I'll probably be the most contrarian on. That said, Chris Dawkus is one of the best DraftKings players in the game. 5.51 DraftKings points per minute, almost 120 when he wins. A lot of that did have to do with his Rodrigo Nascimento win, in which he scored 140, but he put up 104 against Olenek, 106 against Abdurakhimov. Rozenstruik is basically a copy of Derek Lewis, but just a little less Derek Lewis, meaning that he only scores 2 points per minute. Lewis is under 2 points per minute, but he's averaging 107 per win. And that just tells you that he gets that finish early. And that is what's keeping his score so high on average. So he doesn't do anything at all if the fight gets out of the first round, is basically what's happening. I agree with you. I think this leans more staring contest. I think this fight isn't great either. I also think the Dawkuses are on a legendary, not fall from grace because they weren't that high, but they need to get something rolling here. The Dawkus family is having a rough go of it lately. So I'll pick Rozenstruik. Because I don't think the Dawkuses are finished losing yet. Chris could honestly, I wonder what he would look like at light heavyweight. Maybe that's a discussion for another day. But the pick is Rozenstruik, and I'll save the rest for the hot take at the end.
Yeah, you know, I do think I saw that he thought of moving down to light heavyweight. The only thing I would say about that is I think his fast hands are the ones saving him when he moves down.
True.
You know, everybody's going to have fast hands. So, you know, who knows how that would shake out. It would be interesting to see. But, Drake, what are you looking at for this fight?
I'm on the opposite side of both of you.
All right.
I think Dawkus goes back three fights ago, and he figures it out. If you told me that Rozenstruik was going to come out and actually have some striking defense, I'd probably be on him. But his striking defense is not good. He does stand flat-footed, and he just waits for a power punch. this will be where my hot take is as well, so I'll save a little bit for it later. But I do think Dawkus comes out with those fast hands, that movement, and it's going to be lights out real fast.
All right. I mean, yes, it can certainly happen. You know, I mean, and look, we should say that there is tremendous danger in fading a heavyweight fight in this way because, you know, anybody connects and, you know, you're looking at a good night ender. And if that happens, even my 6,800s might not be able to save me if I'm too light on this fight. But you know, we'll see how that goes. All right. Moving on to the next fight. It is the youngest contract in UFC history, Raul Rosas Jr., taking on Jay Perrin. Raul Rosas can be had at Stop Lagging, Please. And now I lost the page.
Are you on Best Fight Odds? They've been awful today.
No. I'm looking for the DraftKings, but
oh, gotcha.
I have, for whatever reason, I veered off of it while my computer was lagging. Let's see how my vamping skills are as the host. That is a key element of being a host, is when things go haywire for a minute, you have to fill the dead space which I think I'm doing right now. I think I'm doing it pretty well. And, oh, look at that. There's the page. Okay. So we have Rosas Jr. at 9,000 taking on Jay Perrin at 7,200. Odds on this fight. Rosas Jr. can be had at minus 240. Jay Perrin at plus 200. And look, I'm almost certain I have way too many dogs for this card. But I don't like when I need to rely on young kids who are grapplers. Reminds me very much of a Chase Hooper, to where, look, grappling is, we know it's skill-based. It's also strength-based. And when you're 18 years old, 17 years old, we've seen it with Chase Hooper, it's just different trying to get some of these guys to the ground. Now, he did well in that in his UFC, Contender Series fight. Was very creative. That fake jump knee to the takedown attempt, which was very slick, but got reversed 3 or 4 times in that fight. In the same manner, too. Was very high on the back, got reversed into side control 3 or 4 times. That kind of chaos, that kind of, you know, all over the place. It's not atypical, not something you wouldn't expect from a kid that young, but also not something I'm that willing to pay 9,000 for. You know, I mean, I like him. He's long. He's obviously a skilled grappler. If he wins, he's going to cover his salary. I don't have any doubts about that. I just don't know if he's ready for this level. And Jay Perrin is at least a solid grappler, at least somebody who's going to try to get on the inside, going to try to fluster the young kid. 16 fights, 10-6, not a great record for Perrin. Most of those on the regional scene, most of those losses. But I wouldn't even say that this is a bad first fight for someone as young as Raul Rosas. I just don't know if his skill set is something I want to bank on at this salary. Having said that, I'm going to have both sides of this fight because I think, as I said, if Rosas wins, he will hit value. I just don't know if he's going to be able to keep up with his own chaos here. So I'm taking Perrin on sort of a flyer. This is not a strong dog take, as I said, but I am going to go with it, and we're going to see how it shakes out. Monk, we'll go to you first. How are you seeing this fight?
Real quick, my guy Lou Betya, who I do a show with, has Jay Perrin round 3 KO at plus 3,400. Wow. After he looked, in the last minute of that Orichi Lang fight, that had another 10 seconds on it. He might be sitting at 1-1. Mario Bautista was his first fight that he had in the UFC. That is a tough go. Mario Bautista is looking real, real good at bantamweight. Honestly, this is a tough fight. I think the line is too wide. I don't know how I can put that much stock into an 18-year-old who basically only grapples, like you said, very one-dimensional. That said, I think I'm going to be stupid and talk myself into not only picking Rosas Jr. to win, but I will have a bunch of him in DraftKings, I think. I mean, he would have scored 5 points a minute in his Dana White Contender Series fight, 104 in that win, which is a decent number. Not so much for 9,000. You'd like to see a bit more than that. But if he comes in here and gets, you know, takes Perrin down and rinse and repeats takedowns and maybe is able to stay off of his back, then he could look okay. I'm probably going to be under on Jay Perrin. I mean, I think he's obviously the most experienced guy this kid's ever fought. But, I'm going to have to be proven wrong by Rosas Jr. God, he's so 18 years old going against a 30-year-old Jay Perrin. And Jay looked fired up in there this week. So I guess I will have some just for the salary at 7,200. How could you not? His projected ownership is around 15%. That's it. So maybe I'll go 20-25 and hope for the best there.
Yeah. I agree. Drake, how you seeing this one?
You guys hit it on the head. I mean, it, like you said, he's an 18-year-old kid. It's definitely hard to trust him. I did take Rosas to win simply because I do think that if he gets takedowns, that he will at some point or another, he is going to control the fight. I don't think Perrin's going to get back up. Now, he does have some slick grappling. He could cause some problems. He could, you know, reverse. He could find his neck. But the problem, I think the biggest issue is just the stage that Rosas will be on. And I said it in my article, I took Rosas to win, but I said it's something to watch and be careful for because it's the biggest stage he's been on. It's the toughest opponents he's been against, and it's not something that's guaranteed by any means. Rosas could come out, he could look slick, but then he doesn't have the man's body yet. He's still a kid, and Perrin could easily take advantage of that. That said, if you're going to have a debut, I think Perrin is the one to have it against because he has not looked all that great. And I mean, it could easily be a setup fight. UFC is famous for it. So, I mean, it's a tough call. I do think he hits value. I think either one of them, Jay Perrin would obviously hit value, but I do think Rosas would hit value. I think it'll be plenty of takedowns, control, and, a potential finish if he finds his neck.
All right. Moving on, we have, I'm sorry, missed one. Ilya Topuria at 8,400, taking on Bryce Mitchell at 7,800. Definitely one of the watch fights on this card. Ilya Topuria has just been, a dynamo coming in, wrecking opponents. Bryce Mitchell, famously with a big, and for some, present company included, heartbreaking domination win over Edson Barboza in his last one. And in this one, I think I'm going with Mitchell, and it was really one thing that swayed me, primarily anyway, and it was the third round of that Yusuf Salal fight where he looked tired. He actually got taken down himself by Salal, and Mitchell can go for days with cardio, and I think that this one is going to go to the deep waters. Topuria, can march his opponents down, can throw big hands, but Bryce Mitchell had a knockdown on Edson Barboza. His hand's improving all the time. So I really think that it's gonna be a lot of fun watching these two scramble on the ground. That's for sure. I think Bryce Mitchell is gonna get the better of it, and I think we've seen him hit those reactive takedowns before. It's going to be good with Topuria pressuring. This is not an easy fight to call. I like a lot of what Topuria does. I think he can go far in the division. I just think that Mitchell is a little bit too tough to get put out. And I think if he can survive, I think this is his fight. So I'm going to have to go slightly on Mitchell, but this is another one, especially at the price points where I think you need both sides of it. Drake, how you seeing this one?
Definitely want both sides of this fight. I'm a huge fan of both guys. I love watching both of them fight. I really wish they weren't matched up right now. That said, I'm a little indifferent about it. Mitchell's grappling is definitely going to be better of the two, but I think Topuria has better wrestling, and Topuria definitely has more power. And I think that's what's going to be the difference. You saw Topuria against Ryan Hall. Ryan Hall is also a magician on the mat, and he knocked him out. So if Mitchell does get it down and he can keep it down and he can keep control, I think he's got a great shot of doing it again. It'll most likely be a decision, 15 minutes and a lot of points. But I think Topuria comes out and he takes advantage of his striking and eventually just he finds control on the mat over Mitchell, and it's either going to be a knockout or a decision for Topuria.
All right. Monk, what about you? You going with the dog here, or are you rolling with Topuria?
I'm going to have to go with Topuria, man. These Georgian, or at least the guys who represent Georgia, have been doing me so nice lately. We had the lead say last week. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Beautiful. But, yeah, I'm going to go with Topuria. Like you said, Mitchell is, I'm not going to say one-dimensional, but kind of one-dimensional. Scores 2.13 points per minute in takedowns and control time. That is basically number one on the card. But guess who's number two on the card in those categories? It's Ilya Topuria, 1.81 points per minute. And Bryce Mitchell is allowing 0.84 points a minute in those two categories put together. So one of these guys is getting controlled and the other one is not. And Topuria is the one not getting controlled. Both guys on average score like 3.87 points per win. About 97 points per win. The grappling numbers are really close. I know, just like Drake said, Mitchell is probably the better grappler, but Topuria cannot be, you know, should not be overlooked. And the power's not even close. The striking, not even close. Topuria just needs one, whether that's in the first round, second round, third round. I thought Jai Herbert was dead. I thought he was dead in that fight. He's not dead. He is okay. He did end up beating the ghost of Kyle Nelson after that. But did, I mean, my goodness. And this was after Topuria, you know, he was up a weight class, unfortunately. Never do that again, please, Topuria. But he got dropped in that fight. Was not looking good in the first round. He battled back and finished the job. So I'm hoping for a Topuria inside the distance. The longer this goes, Mitchell probably will take it, but Topuria decision is not out of the realm of possibilities. Love the salaries for these guys. You got to have both of them. I'll probably be higher on Topuria, though. I think he's not more well-rounded. I think he has more weapons.
So I just realized I didn't read the odds for this one, and that's because they are by themselves next to fights that are not even made yet. So I don't know why they are here.
Yeah, but future events for some reason, which is technically true, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that they could all be here, I guess.
They could all be future events. Yeah.
But all right, so the odds are as close as the salaries, minus 140, Ilia Topuria plus 120, Bryce Mitchell. I mean, that should just be a good fight all the way around. So we'll enjoy that one. But for now, we move on to Dricus Duplessis at 8,800, taking on Darren Till at 7,400. And, you know, I've had so many dogs this card. This is a weird favorite for me to have, I think. But I am on Dricus Duplessis. And I say a weird favorite because I think this is my first pick of Dricus Duplessis. I don't really like him all that much. I think he's too wild. I think he's very unstructured. I think he can gas. And I think that, you know, he just looks bad at the end, beginning of every second round and somehow manages to pull out finishes. But the thing about Darren Till to me is, you know, too long away from the octagon. It's going to be over a year since he last fought, and can he keep up with the speed of this fight? I don't think he's going to be able to do it, especially a guy who likes to stay back, likes to let a fight develop, as Darren Till does. Dricus Duplessis is not going to let that happen. And the other thing is, we've seen Dricus Duplessis wrestle when he needs to do that. We know how much Till struggles with wrestling. Can a long fighter like Darren Till find a counter shot here? Powerful? Yes, he can. And for that reason, you should have some Darren Till, especially at the price. But if he doesn't find it, I don't know how else he wins the fight. And I can't hinge a pick on, you know, finding the perfect counter. You know, done that before. It's never worked out. So have resolved not to do it anymore. And it seems to be working out just fine. So my pick is Dricus Duplessis. I will not be surprised at all if Till finds a knockout shot somewhere in here, but I think the narrative of the fight and the fight dynamics are swinging towards Duplessis, so that has to be my pick. And we'll start with Drake on this one. Drake, how you feel about Till and his return here?
Man, I am not a fan of Till, and I got a few reasons for it. He is a sniper, and that's about all he is. There's nothing left to Darren Till. I think, you know, you're right with Duplessis. He is wild, but I do think that fight with Tavares, he learned a lot. And not only that, he did come out on top in that fight. I think he has worked on managing his gas tank because he has tended to gas out a little early. And I do think he is going to come out with a little more structure, knowing that Darren Till's only way to win this fight is going to be from a knockout. Till doesn't throw any volume at all. He doesn't wrestle. Like you said, the knockout is going to be the only way. I think Dricus comes out and just completely demolishes him.
Yeah, no, I tend to agree. Monk, you see any love for Till on the comeback, or are we all riding the Dricus train here?
I'll be right on the train with you. I think Drake summed it up perfectly. Darren Till is statistically the worst DraftKings player on the card. You cannot play him. 1.55 points per minute. This is worse than like Derek Lewis. He scores 71 points per win when he does win, which is lately very few and far between. These are just very, very poor numbers. Meanwhile, Duplessis scoring like 4.3 per minute, almost 100 per win. Again, I agree with Drake. that Brad Tavares fight answered a lot of questions for me in regards to Dricus du Plessis. I mean, one guy looks like he was carved out of marble, and the other guy looks like he just got off a shift at the factory, basically. I don't think this one I'm with Drake again here. I think this one finishes inside the distance. Outside of that one sniper shot that obviously du Plessis should have been training for this whole time, that's the only weapon he has to avoid. I don't see how Darren Till could possibly take this. I don't like the $7,400 salary. I generally don't like the $8,800 salary. It's one of those high mid-range ones that I don't really feel comfortable playing a ton. Not the case this week. I'm expecting an inside-the-distance finish for Dricus here.
Unanimous decision there for us. And as I was on the futures before, I wasn't in the place to read those salaries. So I'm sorry, the betting line. So let me do that now. It is -175 for Dricus, +150 for Darren Till, who, as we said, is live to the kill shot, but not much.
In retrospect, that 175 -175 for du Plessis might seem like a steal if he comes out here and looks -400 or something.
Absolutely. All right. As we get deeper into the main card here, it is the very late replacement, the Fight Week late replacement, Alex Morono, and taking on Santiago Ponzinibbio. Ponzinibbio is the favorite here. Remember, this was Robbie Lawler's fight. It is now Alex Morono and Ponzinibbio. Ponzinibbio at 8,700, Alex Morono at 7,500. The line on this fight is Ponzinibbio -170, Alex Morono +145, and I'm going to continue my streak here. It's very dangerous, I know, to take a fighter on this short notice, but the dynamics here, I think, lean in favor of Morono, because what we've seen of Ponzinibbio lately is a guy who's fallen behind early in every fight and had to claw his way back in. I don't think you can do that against an Alex Morono who's just going to be coming at you high octane from the beginning, even more so now. We always hear that narrative of, well, look, when a guy is coming in on such short notice, he knows he might not have the gas tank, so he's going to come at you extra hard. And I just don't know if Ponzinibbio is going to be able to fade it or at least have Morono up two rounds here. Like I said, we've seen in fights lately that Ponzinibbio has been worn on, been beat on, had to come back, almost looked finished, came back and made entertaining fights and even won in some cases. I don't think he does it against an Alex Morono who's just going to be all over him. I can't trust Ponzinibbio here. Ponzinibbio might seem attractive as the dog. He's going to be throwing a lot. There's going to be a lot of heavy exchanges, but I just like Morono to control the pace of the fight and wear Ponzinibbio down, and this one I don't think he comes back from. So my pick is Morono. Monk, how you seeing this one?
I see this one as a stay away fight for DraftKings completely. Neither guy scores not even 3 points a minute. They're both at like 88 per win. I like Ponzinibbio. I'll probably pick him to win. That's my pick to win. Morono just on short notice, and Ponzinibbio also does not have to cut that last 10 pounds. That might be the key in this matchup, but we'll see about that. My issue with Ponzi is since his return in 2021, he's fought Li Jingliang, Jeff Neal, Michel Pajeda, Miguel Baeza. He's only beaten Baeza. He's gone 1-3 since then. He only scored 78 points in that Baeza fight. So I'm looking to fade this fight as a whole. I think this goes to this has decision written all over it. Yeah, I'll be under the field here. My pick, though, is Santiago for the win.
And I would add just quickly that Baeza fight, one of the fights that I was alluding to where he fell behind early and really made a fight of it and came out on top. But, man, was it looking dangerous for a while. So, yeah, that's adds to my concerns. Drake, how about you? How do you feel about this one?
I am all over Morono. This is not his first short notice fight. It's not going to be his last. This dude is always ready. He is always ready to go. I think Ponzinibbio is a shell of what he used to be. He has not returned from that injury very well. He is far too hesitant, and that's how he gets behind. And against a guy like Morono, who can throw volume for days, it's just going to kill him. And mix in a takedown or two for Morono, because he does have decent wrestling in his back pocket. I don't think that Ponzinibbio is going to last. I mean, this was, probably does go to a decision. I do think that at 7,500, Morono could hit 90 points, which would be value. I do think he's going to be able to pile up volume in this fight, and that he's absolutely my pick to win.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. And as we are all alluding to hot takes, my hot take has something to do with this. Maybe you can guess, but we will go to that later. For now, we will move to our co-main event. It is Paddy Pimblett at 9,100 taking on Jared Gordon at 7,100. And fellas, I have never rooted so hard against one of my own picks, but I am taking Paddy Pimblett here. I have to be an analyst and take personal prejudices out of it. So therefore, I am on Pimblett. I think, you know, Pimblett is surviving up the ranks here based on his physicality, his grappling, and his length. I think all three of those things are going to play here. I think that, Jared Gordon was really exciting when he first came on because he was one of these guys who would just kill you with pace and just sort of leave you in the third round dead and put up a bunch of points. He still tries to put on pace, but I think his gas tank is failing him now more than it has in the past, which limits him somewhat. I think that Pimblett is going to be the better grappler here, and I don't think Gordon is going to shy away from exchanges, which I think is going to hurt him in a spot like this. I wouldn't put Pimblett on par of a grappler as Grant Dawson, but I do think that it's similar in, you know, the way Pimblett can take the back and how quickly we saw Grant Dawson get to those positions. So I think Pimblett is, unfortunately, regrettably, going to find another one here. I actually did write this up in one of my articles this week as Paddy Pimblett by submission. I think he finds it here. I am like the rest of you, and not just because I don't like him, waiting to fade Paddy just because his striking defense is zero. We've already seen that in his fights, but you know, I don't think Gordon has the kind of power or consistent striking attack to do that here. I think this is going to be largely grappling based, and I think that Paddy's going to take it. So with a heavy sigh, my pick is Paddy Pimblett. And we'll go to Drake first. Drake, how do you see this one?
Paddy the Batty. Yeah. Dude, I have been a fan of him since he was Cage Warriors before then. I love this kid, man. I need anybody that can bring that type of excitement to a fight. And not to mention, this is a little side note, he is a phenomenal human being. He really is. Look at all the stuff that he does for the community and everybody else. He's a great person. That said, a lot of people were on Gordon or are on Gordon. I don't really know why. Gordon has, to me, has not really fought and beaten anybody. All of his fights in the UFC have pretty much gone to a decision, except for when he lost. And you said that I don't agree with you saying that his grappling is not up to the par of Dawson's. I think his grappling is actually better than Dawson. I think Dawson is just stronger. We saw what Paddy Pimblett did to Jordan Leavitt. And I mean, Leavitt is not a bad grappler by any means. That's what he is known for. It's what he's good at. And Paddy made him look silly. So I think it's going to be really quick. I think Paddy will probably get hit once or twice, might stun him a little bit. Vendramini stunned him a little bit, and look what happened. Turn right back around. I do agree. He does need to work on that striking defense a little bit. I think that'll come, especially when he knows the talent that he's going to be facing, but it should be lights out pretty quickly once this hits the mat.
Yeah, no, we do agree ultimately there. Monk, how are you seeing this one?
Yeah, we're going to go 3-for-3 here. It's probably going to be Paddy. I will be rooting for Jared Flash Gordon, however. But to avoid all the Twitter takes and whatnot, I'll just stick with some stats here. To be completely honest, I mean, Paddy scores very well, 3.5 points a minute, 101.5 when he wins. I mean, at 9,100, he might need to score a little bit better to make the optimal lineup. Against Kazula Vargas, he was 9,400, only put up 98, but he did put up 119 against the aforementioned Luigi Vendramini in his last fight against Leavitt, only 87. So I might be fading him a little bit. His ownership obviously is going to be the highest on the card, most likely. Probably somewhere between 40, 45, 50%. I'll probably be a little under that. There is value on Jared Gordon here, guys. 7,100. What do you get for that, though? He's $1,150 under his average. He scores 4.7 points per minute. This is over 130 minutes of UFC cage time. 105.8 when he wins, over 7 wins. But like Drake said, when he loses, he's been finished in all 4 losses. So if you think that's how this is going to go, I would be a little trepidatious on him. But at 7,100, I mean, he's going to be one of everybody's favorite dogs because people are going to love to pick against Paddy Pimblett, especially at the $7,100 price tag. So I don't know how I'm going to avoid getting Jared Gordon in my lineups. I don't necessarily want to, but I don't want to have too much of him. And that's what I think is going to happen with a lot of people. Cause like you guys, I do think Paddy comes in here, finishes this fight early, and gets Jared Gordon out of there.
You know, Twitter takes against Paddy aside. I think people get in this mode where they look to fade certain fighters. And then when you get in that mode, I think they look to do it regardless of what the matchup is. And they just say, okay, well, this time it's going to go. Well, no, I mean, you have to look at the specific matchups, and I think we agree here that Jared Gordon isn't the one here. So if that, you know, curtails the ownership of Paddy and puts it on Gordon, you know, so much the better. You know, we're here to make money after all, and I think Paddy, I agree with you guys, I think Paddy's the one to do it. All right, so we're going to move on to the main event here. It is Magomed Ankalaev at 9,200 taking on Jan Błachowicz at 7,000. The line on this fight is Magomed Ankalaev at -350, Jan Błachowicz at +260. This was the fight that was so cruelly robbed from Glover Teixeira. Won't get into that too much, but you know, another reason why the UFC is not my favorite company, although I love the fighters, of course. This is another one for me that I'm just a little bit of afraid of how it might score. When you look at Ankalaev, yeah, he's actually got more finishes than not in his UFC in his UFC career. I think it's 5-4. But if you look at the guys he's finished, it's Kutalaba twice, it's Marcin Prachnio, it's Dalcha Champion, who we mentioned earlier. It's all these guys who are glass cannons who are going to bring the action. That's not really on Błachowicz. Both these guys. I don't want to tread on Monk's territory too much, but I'm going to get into some stats here myself. Both these guys under 4 strikes landed per minute. Neither gets hit. Well under 3 absorbed per minute. So this, I think, could go a little bit slowly. Could be a little bit of what we saw in the Thiago Santos fight, where more countering ability. I do expect Jan to try to use his grappling a little more. We haven't really seen Ankalaev off his back, and we haven't really seen him look to use his wrestling. He's not really a submission guy, which you wouldn't expect, not from a fighter from Dagestan. In fact, I don't think he has any submission wins. His grappling is more take you down and smash you when we get there. But I actually think Jan is going to be the one to try and wrestle here. And you know what? I'm taking the dog here just purely based on salaries. I don't think Ankalaev covers 9,200. I think Jan's got a better chance. I think Jan is a very underrated boxer with a very underrated jab. And I think he's very strong. And I think that wrestling can come into play here. Ankalaev, look, when he has the right opponent, he can make magic happen. When he doesn't, it can sort of just be a slow process where he picks the opponent apart. I don't think he makes 9,200, even if you want to pick him. But I am going to go with Błachowicz here, and we will start the main event off with Monk. How do you see us capping this off?
I think it's, you know, I respect the dog play. I like Jan Błachowicz. I'm going to be on the other side, however. I'm going to take Magomed to be and new light heavyweight champion. 9,200, I do think you're right. This may be a time where he has an issue paying off that $9,200 salary. He scores 3.3 points a minute, 94 per win. If you're only going to score 94 and you're 9,200, boy, it's going to have to be either all chalk for you to even think about sniffing that optimal lineup, or this might be the lowest scoring pay-per-view of all time to make the optimal there. His defensive pace is where he shines. He allows 1.3 points per minute. This is over 111 minutes of UFC fight time. Only 68 is what he gave up when he lost. I think Jan is, you know, I like the guy, but I think if he wants to grapple here, I think Ankalaev, all it's going to take is maybe one trip, and then just he's going to be on top, and then the bell's going to ring, and then the second round's going to happen. One trip, and he's going to be on top. I just think that's how this one goes until he eventually finishes the fight. I'm thinking ground and pound TKO late third, fourth round, something like that. I expect Ankalaev to finish the fight in the later rounds, not paying off his $9,200 salary, though. So I think he's going to get the and new. I'm going to be probably under for ownership for this one. But, yeah, I mean, shouts to you if you had Ankalaev to be the champion by the end of 2022. I heard that was like 10-1 earlier in the year. So hopefully people got in on that, because I don't think either one of these guys expected to be here today. I mean, maybe one of them you could make an argument, you know, but Jiří out, Glover's nowhere to be found. All of a sudden we got Jan and Ankalaev fighting for a vacant title. So anything could happen. I think Ankalaev is stronger, and he's going to show it here, though.
See, even when I do stats, it doesn't matter, because Monk comes with the much more.
I'll give you some different ones. Don't worry.
I love it. Drake, take it, Solmier. Who you got in the main event?
Ankalaev all day. I said, so I'm going to read it straight from my article. I got Blachowicz will likely need a knockout to take the belt. His powers is the only thing he's going to have an edge in. Ankalaev is as close to a flawless fighter as you can get. And I honestly mean that. His defense is probably the best in the division. It might be the best in the UFC. His defense is incredible. He has crisp technical striking. He has an excellent ground game, his wrestling, his grappling. I mean, this is about as close to a flawless fighter as you can get. And I do not think Blachowicz has anything on him. I think if he does not get him square, which nobody seems to be able to, then there's no chance. And I mean, if you look at Ankalaev's record, he lost one fight, that random Hail Mary submission to Paul Craig. He should be 19-0. That was an amazing fight. You can bet that mistake will never happen again. And I see Ankalaev and new and keeping this belt for 3 to 5 years. I really do. This dude is amazing.
You know, there is a pretty significant part of me that wants Ankalaev to never lose again and just have that as the only loss in his record. So that when everybody sees it, it's like, oh, how did you lose? Oh, well, I was winning literally the entire fight, and then I lost.
To the GOAT, Paul Craig.
Oh, yeah. I mean, how do you not love that guy? But
I love him.
To get a little petty here, was knocked down by Thiago Santos, but very different fighter. Very, very different fighter. So
faster hands than Blachowicz, too.
Absolutely. No question. So, yeah, that's I certainly understand the Ankalaev pick. It's definitely more of a salary play. I just. You know, maybe recency bias. I don't really count the Anthony Smith because, you know, that happened with his leg. He hurt his leg, and then that was the finish. That fight was going pretty slowly as well. I'm just concerned about salary, but I do take your points as
Two guys below 7K. What are you worried about salary for?
I'm just saying generally as
– He's going to have five dogs in his lineup.
Yeah. And well, no, I'm actually leaving $6,700 on the table. That's my
yeah.
But yeah. Okay, so that is going to be the card. Look, if there's any hot takes in the chat, get them up now. Hot takes, if you are just joining us, any dog play, anything that you know is going to be very juicy on the plus money. We're trying to go at least plus 300, folks. We're heavy hitters here. So anything that is big plus money that you think can reasonably come in, that somebody can, you know, throw a few dollars on, throw some beer money on, see if they can take it. I will go first. I think we all alluded to ours. I said mine was going to be Morono. I think I saw Morono, and this one has plus 650 on the knockout, which is bizarre to me. I know that Ponzinibbio has been durable. I know that Morono hasn't been the best finisher. Having said all of that, I think we all agreed that Ponzinibbio has looked pretty shop-worn as he's come back, and he's going to get blitzed here. and I don't know if he's going to survive. And at plus 650, it's sure as hell worthy of a shot. So that is my hot take. We'll go to you first, Monk. What is the plus play that everybody should be looking for?
Love it. I think you sold yours short. It's like average on plus 700, even plus 800 somewhere, maybe around FanDuel area. So that's a good one. I'll give you the one I alluded to earlier. I'm going Daukus Rozenstruik. Goes to decision. You can find that plus 350 right about there, like Bet Online DraftKings, plus 420 over at FanDuel. If you're into that type of thing. Yeah, I think this one turns into a steering contest. So that's, you know, obviously, you know, quarter unit, little half unit, little play there, maybe something like that, plus 350, plus 400 odds from two guys that hopefully will just stare at each other for fit. That's going to be the sweat of all sweats, but yeah, it could pay off.
You know, I agree with that. I tried it before with the Augusto Sakai fight, and end of round one, it was going perfectly, and then there was
until it's not.
it's all it takes. So, but no, I do like that play as well. Drake, what do you got for us?
I'm gonna give you two, if you don't mind.
Please.
First one is gonna be, I'm going completely opposite of you, Monk. You ready for this? All right,
let's do it. Daukus
by TKO. KO stoppage round one. You can find it at plus 400. Ooh. And I would take it further if you can find it. He's going to take a page out of the Pavlovich book and he's going to finish him in 60 seconds.
Oh my goodness. Then I would have chosen the wrong fight to fade.
those 60 second bets, I think you can find them in certain places. They're definitely a lot of fun. And if you can't, I mean, certainly play it on DraftKings because that's where that bonus lies for DFS, and that would definitely be a big one.
I want to give a two-player parlay real quick here.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
So you can find the odds somewhere between – I've seen Billy Q as low as minus 160 now, and I've seen Dricus du Plessis around that. But those two together, they're both about minus 170, put them together, and you're getting a nice two-player parlay right there.
I love that. Yeah, I love it.
I like that as well. There's something in my DNA that won't let me trust du Plessis to that extent. I don't think I could muster the strength to put him in a parlay, but I don't hate it. I definitely see it, I definitely agree with everything you said about the dynamics. So yeah, I definitely want to take a look at. All right, I think we're gonna wrap up. Having said that, guys, great show. Thank you both so much for filling in. It was a blast, as always.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Guys, do you have anything to promote or say where you can be found? Or, Monk, you want to start that off?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and start it off again. Thank you for any time. Seriously, any time. I absolutely love doing the show. I love DraftKings heavy shows. That's right. That's my bread and butter, the kind of the lane I picked for myself. So I absolutely love it. Love you. You know, you, Sean, and Sun Tzu are fantastic guys to watch. So be sure to hit that like on this video and RotorWire for sure. But you can find me, Monk Maddox, on YouTube. I've got a 13 or 14 card breakdown. Now it's a 12 card breakdown or 12 fight breakdown for UFC 282 on my channel, spelled just like it is right under right there. You can find me on the MMA Engine. Do a little thing called Salary Voodoo where I get crazy with some stats that nobody else has and let you know who to start for GPPs or who not to start. Other than that, guys, yeah, just thanks a ton for having me on, and check out these guys' stuff over on RotoWire.
Absolutely. We love the advanced stats. Drake, we know about your articles on RotoWire, of course. Is there anything else you want to promote or tell us where we can find you?
Me and my buddy just started up a brand new little podcast video that we're doing every week, similar to this. Not quite as in depth, but you know, just a little breakdown. It's picks. Sorry, It's Time UFC Picks on YouTube. Also made a Facebook page. It's Time Picks, and you know, any support there would be great. You know, thanks for having me. Thanks for having Monk. You guys are awesome. I really enjoyed doing this, and hope we can do it again.
Absolutely. You know, you guys are always welcome. Again, great show. You can find my work on RotoWire as well. Guys, thanks so much for watching. Thanks so much for tuning in. And good luck in all your contests. That'll be it for us. And we'll see you next week. Have a good one.